Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at the blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. I upload a show to it once a week, once every 2 weeks. It just kind of depends on the kickboxing news. And the most efficient way is just to enter Warman Kickfighting Show into your iTunes search engine, and my show pops right up. You could also enter Lord Gaul, which was my username when I first fell in love with the sport, back when I was on Kakatugi, K1 Fans, K1 USA, and so on. Twitter handle for those who are big into Twitter, twitter.com/StephenTheWarman, one word. I'm joined by an all-star cast from the Liver Kick crew. I've got Jay Johnsey. Jay Johnsey, say what's up to the people and give me your Twitter.
Hey, everyone. Twitter's at Jay
Johnsey,
and yeah, that's about it.
Cool. And then I'll also joined with Dave Walsh of Liverkick.com. Dave?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a while since I've been on here, so that's good. You know, at Liverkick, D-O-T-C-O-M on Twitter for the site, and then my own is at D-V-E-W-L-S-H because I don't like A's.
Got it. So, got the man who hates vowels and the man of little words. So, we'll go ahead and get into it full. First of all, as we, you know, this is our year in review of the 2015 year. I will make a highlight for this. The highlight will come out next week, the kickboxing highlight that I usually do every year. I'm going to do a little bit different theme this year, but I'm definitely going to get that out to you. But I wanted to have the podcast talk about the year in review because you guys, I'm sure you saw, you know, Coach of the Year and all that kind of stuff that everybody else does. There are things that you're not going to see in this podcast. You're not going to see me do a promotion of the year because that's just a weird thing to do. You know, in kickboxing, it's just, even if K1, when K1 was at its height, whenever I see people do like, you know, promotion of the year, and I'm like, is there another choice outside the UFC if you're in mixed martial arts? Is there someone else? Is there another answer that you're expecting to get there? So that's why I was like, no, I go by event of the year. What was the fight card that you watched where you're like, man, this was amazing, top to bottom, not going to do whatever? And then the other thing, of course, is we're just going to explore some things that, you know, the good and the bad. You know, we're not going to leave some of the ugly stuff out. That's why one of the topics that I sent to these gentlemen is which fighter had, you know, one of the worst years. Doesn't necessarily mean that they are a bad fighter. They just came upon a bad year. Or, you know, doesn't necessarily have to be a fighter. It could be, you know, a team or whatever. But I'm going to go ahead and jump into the first thing. I want to ask, I'll start with you, Jay. What is your thoughts of the 2015 year in the kickboxing world? Oh, one more thing before we get started. This podcast is predominantly kickboxing. I'm going to do another one that's predominantly full rules Muay Thai, and I'm going to do another one that is with the women's kickboxing and Muay Thai scene. This one is predominantly kickboxing. So before I get the messages, the hate mail, the individuals that are coming after me, I'm going to let you know what it is before we start it. But anyways, Jay, what was your view on the 2015 year in kickboxing?
That was a strange year. I mean, everything seems so split up right now. Fighters are fighting here and there. There's no full one organization that's got everybody, which is a little bit annoying. But we came out with some good fights, some good knockouts, some, you know, some, like, the promotions are starting to get bigger, I think, starting to come back. And so I think it's maybe set up for a good 2016.
Perfect. And Dave, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I felt like this was like a setup year almost. Not a ton happened. It was like, you had, I mean, I guess you could say that there was a pretty decent movement going on in China with WLF and Kunlun and stuff. But at the same time, not a lot of interesting stuff happened. I mean, Glory kind of restructured itself and put on shows that were not quite as spectacular, but then they became more consistent. And it was just I don't know, there wasn't a lot of excitement that happened with it. There was good stuff that happened, obviously, but it wasn't a bad year, and it wasn't a good year either. It was just kind of this year that it happened, and it set up the future a little bit better.
For sure, I definitely think that the year had a transitional kind of feel to it. You know, like, this is just the starting point, but wait till you see next year kind of deal. You know, there were, of course, good things in terms of the amount of shows that Glory did. You know, which, of course, they had that big setback, you know, in 2014 because they did the pay-per-view and they lost a bunch of money, and then they didn't do another show for like 4 months, 5 months. But I think that, like, when I looked at this year as a whole, I was like, you know what? You know, some things are set up well. We've got the man to beat in certain weight classes, which is always very important. You know, they got to some consistency. I'll get into it more when I get to my moment of the year. But I definitely want to go ahead and get started with the fighter of the year for people. And I know sometimes it's the one that you want to leave to the very end. It's the one that, you know what? We will leave it to the very end because it's no fun starting with the one that everybody wants to hear. So let's go ahead and go with Prospect of the Year. Prospect of the Year, to clarification for people who are listening, we're talking about people who are not regulars in either the K1 brand or the Glory brand. People who have the skill, they're young. I'm thinking people who are usually under the age of 22. Young up-and-coming stars that you think are going to be special down the road. Of course, there's a lot of options. It kind of depends on how you see the Infusion brand. Infusion, it's weird because it's like one of the things that I will say is there's more opportunities for people to make money in kickboxing now than there was in what people would consider the heyday of you know, Muay Thai kickboxing. Like if I go back to 2001, that was about, you know, the heavyweight division. So there was a lot of opportunities. There were guys who fought at, you know, 180 pounds. And they were doing everything in their power to try to put on the weight so they can get to K1 one day. You know, Nathan Carnage Corbett's the only guy who was like, you know, I'm staying here. You know, but most guys were like, I'm going to get bigger and try to fight the bigger organizations. But when I think about the opportunities they had for those guys outside of the max weight class and the heavyweight weight class, we didn't have a lot. Now we do have those options. And with it, we've got a bunch of young stars that I want to see how things end up for them down the road. I'll go ahead and start with my own. It's a little bit cheating because I've used him before. I've talked about Muhammad Jiraiya in the past. I've talked about Ilyas Belaid in the past. But I'm going to Russia. I'm going with Alim Nabayev. I love Alim Nabayev. I think that it's not just that he's a very skilled fighter. It's not that he's exceptionally tall for his weight class and so on. It's just the it factor, the charisma. The, you know, they used to call it swag 2 years ago. Everything changes. But like the idea is this guy is somebody that you want to watch. The style that he brings, the spinning techniques, his combinations, the way he switches stances, the step-up knees. He really does have all the tools to be special. He's gotten one opportunity to fight in K1 and he won it. It didn't get used again. Glory has never used him. I really want to see this guy get that opportunity. So with Glory focusing on Europe as we go into next year, they hit up Moscow for a big show. I definitely want to see him on the card. I mean, it's not that he's, you know, from Russia in particular. I think he was, you know, originally from Ukraine. But he's the kind of star that I want to see out there on a regular basis. I'll go to you, Dave. Who is your prospect of the year?
I am going to Japan on this one because, like you said, with Infusion, it's like, it's hard to – I personally think it's hard to gauge these guys.
Yes.
I think that they're exciting, and I think that, like, Belaid and Jiraiya, they're great for who they're fighting. But at the same time, who are they fighting? It's tough for me because they can be exciting, but then at the same time, until you've taken a step up in competition, I just don't know that. So that's why I want to go to Japan and say Rin Hiramoto, who's been fighting in K1 Japan a bunch. He's had some ups, had some downs. But at the same time, this was a good year for him, and he's probably the most exciting dude to watch at 65 kilograms outside of the top names right now.
For sure, and we'll kick it to you, Jay. Dave, because that's what it says on my screen. Jay Dave, kick it to you, Jay. Who was your prospect of the year?
I had kind of two, but this is the only one, the only question out of all of them that I'm actually going to be biased with. I'm actually going to pick my brother on this one.
No problem.
Josh Johnsey, because, like, same as, like, they've said, he's had ups and downs this year, but he's showed by fighting Petrosian, Sidichai, he's fought Hinata now, he's fought all these guys, the guys that he's lost to are all top-name guys that are beating everyone else easily, and they didn't beat him easily. He can hang with all these guys now. He showed that to everyone. He can hang with them no problem. He's still only 22, and he's still barely had any fights.
For sure.
He still only had, you know, 25, 26 fights. And half of those fights are against guys that he should have just knocked out, which he did. And or they just quit before the first round was even over. So this was the year where he, you know, now he's fought Petrosian, who's a guy who we've been watching since we were 15 years old, or he was even younger than that. And now who's left to be scared?
For sure.
Petrosian was the guy. And then my close second pick was Chad Sugden, because I think he did I think he did really well this year. He beat Mertzel, and even though he got injured, I think he probably would have won that tournament.
For sure.
I agree with that.
Those are awesome answers. The Sugden one, it's weird that I didn't think Sugden, but he's super young too.
He's super young.
It blew me away in my mind. I was thinking, you know, when I first got signed, I was like, you know, I've heard of Sugden's name and that kind of stuff, whatever. Then I remember I checked on his birthday at the time. And then I was like, you know, for whatever reason, I was thinking when I first heard his name that this guy was like 28, 29. I was like, this guy's young. Everybody we're talking about, it's like 22 and under. And I'm like, Sugden's going to be somebody. And of course, we won't even get into the fact that, you know, you mentioned the injury. If you beat Mirko Gernot, you see Gernot's fighting for your title opportunity, that's got to be weird, you know? Yeah.
Dude, I don't know if you pay attention to our Facebook sometimes, but his dad got really upset that Chad wasn't, like, super high ranked on welterweight. But, you know, the way it works, he beat Myrtle before Myrtle was ranked in the weight division. You can't do that, man.
Hey, you know.
And he legitimately beat Myrtle, like,
yes.
Yeah, absolutely.
There was no thing, but then again, Myrtle came back and repossessed Guy with that fight against Nicky.
Yeah, so it's just we'll talk about that more down the road. But those are great options. And then again, and I want to credit you, you know, as his coach, you know, when it comes to John C. and his improvement over the years, you said the biggest point. He's not getting the fights. He's got to catch up to these guys in practice. And it's something that I brought up on Twitter, that he's usually catching up to these guys because of his training, who he trains with and where he puts himself out there to train. So it's hard to close the gap on people who, you know, if you are UC Super Combat, they could just go get some random whoever to fight, you know, the Stoikas. And the Stoikas will always have the activity to keep getting themselves better with bodies. He's got to do it in practice. So definitely shout out to him. And I think that...
It's really exactly what he needs.
Yeah.
He really needs it just to get more fights, you know. But it's really hard to do it with just glory.
For sure. Definitely good stuff there. Good stuff on the prospect front, and let's all be paying attention to these gentlemen as we move into the next year. We're gonna go ahead and move into upset of the year. There's a few options that I thought were good. Of course, Masaru Glunder over Misaki Nori was a big upset because I definitely thought that. You know, I still feel that Nori is the best of 65 kgs. I think it's him and Ku Fairtex. Fairtex, the clear number one. But when that happened with Glunder, it showed that Nori was just trying to stay behind that guard that he plays all the time, and he tries to play his counters and his low kicks out of there, and he played it with the wrong guy. A guy who had a really good step-up knee and really let his offensive go. And he fought like a guy who was like, if I get my opportunity to fight Japan, I'm letting it go. And not everybody does that. I thought he did a good job of it. With that said, not even close to my upset of the year, because anytime Wakao loses, it's the upset of the year. And it's just when Kayal, I believe I'm pronouncing this right, and Dehaniev, when he got that victory, it's, first of all, people, you get a bad understanding of the Russians when you see some of their fight records, because people are like, Bakal lost to a guy with like 7-8 fights. No. These guys fight like 150 amateur fights. They fight all the time. And it's, I remember I didn't really understand it until, I'm having a mental lapse right now. The guy who fought Badr Hari twice, kicked him when he was on the ground. Karev.
Oh.
Yes, Karev. When Karev came over to the K-1 tryout, he had the roster. It said he was 144-6 because he included his amateur fights. But his pro fights wasn't that high. So this guy comes out and he says he's like 7-0 and 8-0. And I remember people saying, but Kyle lost to somebody who's, you know, got like 7-8 fights. No. He lost to a guy who had been doing it forever. And the thing that made the upset even cooler was Bukau fought back. Bukau, bloody mess, round two, scoring knees at will, like just really pushing. It was such an awesome, awesome performance. But it just shows the cultural understanding, because in Thailand, all anybody talked about was Bukau got cut. Like, the cut was the thing that they went off the most. For the rest of the Western world, we went off the fact that this guy outpointed him, had him in trouble. You know, it's just weird, that kind of complexity. But it's just that when I go to my Facebook wall, it's when I usually get a good feel for how big something is in kickboxing. And all I could see over and over and over was Bacall lost to this guy. Bacall lost to this guy. For me, no questions asked, the biggest upset of the past year was Bacall losing to Kayal Dehaniev. Going to go ahead and kick to you, Jay. What was your upset of the year?
For me, it was Sergey Adamchuk beating Murat Gregorian on one day's notice. We were there that day, and there was a whole bunch of mismatch stuff, weird stuff going on with Josh's opponent, and a whole bunch of stuff going on where people were testing positive for blood doping before sports to fight him, not us being allowed to fight, all this weird stuff going on. And so they called Mike and bring Sergey in, and he shows up. This little guy, small, so much smaller, shows up just to fight Murat on one day's notice, eating pasta the day before, like just to weigh in. And we were like, oh man, we actually sat and had lunch with him. Man, this is going to be bad.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got in there, and did he ever looked good? He schooled Murat to me. He took him to school. Murat couldn't touch him. Three rounds, every round, he won every single round without really breaking that much of a sweat. I couldn't believe it.
Definitely. That's good. I'm sorry, I was just going to compliment. Yeah, definitely good stuff there. You know, in my recollection of it, I think I did give Gregorian the second round, if I'm remembering that correctly. But I definitely thought rounds one and three, you use the right terms, schooled him. Like he's only that pressure style that he's been playing his whole life. It just, see, here had something for it. Adamchuk was just too slick for him. So definitely good stuff there. Dave, what was your upset of the year?
This was a China special. It was Andre Gershemik knocking out TKO, whatever, Rico Verhoeven.
Yes.
And it's one of those things where heavyweight has been the division in kickboxing for forever because of K1. And your undisputed heavyweight champion goes to China for a gimme fight, and he loses. And he loses in like kind of embarrassing fashion.
Oh, yeah.
And then he goes on to have a really good year anyway. But there's still, Glory won't talk about it. They won't mention that. They won't. They will not mention that. That never happened, according to them. But it did. And it's, to me at least, that was, especially with how good he's looked this year, it was so just like, wow. I mean, I understand there's situations here. His wife was having a kid, and God, she had to win 2 days later, and he missed it, and his mind wasn't into it. He didn't really want to take the fight, blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, that was a pretty big deal, considering where heavyweight kickboxing is right now and how it needs stability, and that was the exact opposite of what it needed.
For sure. Good stuff there. And if anybody feels like, hey, Steven, you used a Muay Thai fight, I'll go ahead and say the Glenda Norrie just so you guys can leave me alone. But, like, ideally, I thought that...
Still kind of kickboxing, you know?
Yeah, that's what I thought, too. Especially the way the rules played out in the tournament. But, you know, it was in Top King, and I think, you know, there's still perception that Top King's full rules Muay Thai. But they don't let them clinch as long. As soon as I hear that, I go, okay, it's kickboxing, sort of. You know, as soon as, you know, they take that away.
They're just in the same vein as Thai fight was, is, I guess, you know, like,
as soon as they allow all those people, it's going to just say full Muay Thai,
Exactly. I agree. But good stuff in the upset front. Let's go ahead and move on. We are going to go to, we'll hit up some of the worst. That way we could talk about, you know, some athletes who, doesn't mean that you're a bad fighter. Doesn't mean you're a bad fighter. But we're going to go ahead and talk about people who had, you know, really kind of step back years. I had a couple of options that came up right away. Andy Risty came to mind just because of activity. You know, he wins, his first fight of the year. I want to say that was against Steve Moxon. I believe he knocked out Moxon in January. And then after that, he, you know, had the very one-sided, you know, loss where most people are like, why didn't this get stopped against Robin van Roosmalen? Which is a crazy performance by Robin van Roosmalen. He really fought well that day. So his name came to mind. David Kyria, just kind of, you know him. Sidichai, of course, is a monster, but... For those who watch Kyria fight a lot, as soon as we see him do the flip kick, we know you're going to lose. You know, like, you don't do the flip kick when you're winning. You just got to pull that thing out when you're frustrated. And he had the loss to, you know, Enrico Gokia, and no shame there. The guys he's lost to are good guys. But considering this dude was the champion, and I knew he was only going to have the champion just that one day, just that one time, this guy, he kind of had a step back year for me. Like he really did. So if I'm going to pick a fighter, Man, I was leaning towards Alex Pereira too, but he was winning. He just didn't do it at the highest level. I think I'm gonna go with I'll go with David Kiry on this one. I just think that it was just such a the way Sitichai stopped him, you know, and the way that he didn't perform when Kunlun, people go to China to get wins, and he's going to China and getting losses. So I definitely think that I'm going to lean for David Kiria having the, you know, worst year as a fighter in the past year. And as a side note, go ahead and add this. The other worst year that has to be mentioned is Stefano Valenti, because if you see a complete Twitter wall full of people just bashing you as a professional, it's just when people no longer care about the fights and they only care about, and by the way, you know, it's like, oh, so-and-so's the winner. And by the way, Valenti needs to, you know, get killed by, you know, diseased dogs. Like, the idea is this guy was so bad that he became the story in a lot of fights. So I don't want to leave him out because he's a ref. He has to be mentioned as one of the guys that's in that squared circle. But as far as fighter goes, David Kiria. Go ahead and go to you, Dave. Who do you feel had the worst year, you know, with all the options that we had?
You know, a part of me wants to say Joseph Valtellini just because, poor dude.
For sure.
Concussions and stuff, like, you know, and having to sit out, having to get your title stripped. But for an active fighter, I'd have to say, on a couple of sides of the spectrum, Werther Reinhardt, he just had a rough year. I mean, starts it off with China, and, you know, Sitichai is going to Sitichai.
Yep.
And brutal. It was brutal. It knocked him out of a fight that he was supposed to have in February, I thought. And then the Sugden fight, I mean, you know, how many people outside of the UK really knew who Chad Sugden was? I'd seen him fight for K1 and a couple of times, so mm-hmm. I knew who he was, but at the same time, didn't really know what he was capable of. And then, of course, the total bummer of a decision against Nicky Holskin, which, you know, either side, whatever you, whoever you saw won that, still, he put in a career-like highlight performance and came up short. That's a lot of disappointment for a year, especially for a guy as good as he is.
Correct. Couldn't agree more. That is good stuff. Jay, who'd you have?
I had two. I'm glad you mentioned one of them. He was my second one. My first option is Daniel Alonga. He has fought five times this year and lost five times this year, I think. And been robbed, a couple of them bad. And he just can't get catch a break. He just couldn't catch a break. I felt horrible for him every time. I've spoken to him after a few of his fights. He takes it really well. I don't know how he is when he gets home, but apparently he takes it really well. But man, just felt horrible for him this year. He's really not lived up to what he used to be, the wrecking machine that he was, knocking everybody out.
For sure. And it's crazy, but even when he was the wrecking machine, when he was in Showtime, he had the flaws because he could always be hit. He's never been a defensive wizard. But he just – there are moments where he had some complete kickboxing performances. But even in those, I kind of look back and go, you know what? He did kickbox well against Dustin Jacoby. But that was against Dustin Jacoby, you know? The way that he lost to Tyrone Spong, people were like, you know, he didn't get his chance really. But I couldn't even – now as you say it, I go, he did lose that many times. You know, it's like I didn't even put it together because I'm sitting there thinking, I'm looking at my list. I got Errol Zimmerman. I'm like thinking about guys who had rough years, and I didn't think about Daniel Younga because he was getting the activity, but I wasn't realizing that he was losing these fights. Crazy that's the year he had. Definitely a good one there. Man, that's good stuff. Let's go ahead and slide it over to – well, before I move forward, I do want to give you guys a chance to talk about the Stefano Valenti thing because it kind of – it just – I mean, especially, you know, because we're kind of – all of us are active on Twitter when the kickboxing events are going off. Have you guys ever seen anything like that where people were so focused on a ref? I'll start with you, Jay. They were – I mean, they wanted this guy, like, bad. Like, they – like, people who were casual fans were like, what's this guy doing? You know, people like – I mean – Errol Hawani and those kind of guys or whatever, I understand that they are professionals as far as reporters and so on, but Errol Hawani is a casual fan to me. So, like, if he starts his comments that he makes are from the perspective of a guy who's just kind of, you know, checking out this kickboxing thing, what are your views, you know, as I said, Jay, what are your views on how bad things were for Stefano Valenti?
Well, I was one of those guys on Twitter. I was that guy. I hate it. He's he's ruining fights. He's ruining fights that I can't. Yeah, it's really hard. When I see him step in the ring every time, we just get sad. I really don't know like what they can do about it or what he needs to do. Maybe he needs to refresh on courses or I don't know. But really, it's the inconsistency is just terrible.
For sure.
That's the biggest thing is the inconsistency.
Same thing, Dave. What are your thoughts? I mean, just, you know, I mean, we all have examples in our mind, but even as I just recall that, you know, the tournament with Musab Amrani and in the final where clearly, you know, it's Kyal, I think I'm saying it correct. I mean, I think he would have been stopped sooner, but clearly he's standing up on his feet, you know what I'm saying? You're doing the call, you get to 8, and then he starts to stand up, and you go 9-10, and I'm like, there you go again. Jumping into fights. You had your mind made up before he stood up that you were going to call this fight off. Those kind of moments, people talk about them all the time. What are your thoughts on it, Walsh?
You know, it's one of those things of like the only thing I can really relate it to is probably a couple of times that Steve Mazzagatti's really gotten it for some of his UFC reffing. But, you know, Valenti's bad. He's just really like... what's the name of that Dutch referee that was bad for a long time?
Joop Ubeda?
Yeah. Joop is one of those guys that likes to be involved in the fight, likes to be kind of a central focal point, you know? Yes. He's always in there, he's always doing something, but he was never that bad. It's referees, we shouldn't know your name.
Correct.
We shouldn't see you. We shouldn't have to worry about you. Yeah, sure, there's the famous ones out there. I get that. You know, everybody knows Big John and Herb Dean and all that. That's fine because they've been around for so long and they're usually pretty consistent. But, you know, the same thing with, like, you know, K1 had a couple of guys that were kind of weird, but at the same time, you knew them because they were just there all the time. Mm-hmm. But with this, I mean, I can't really remember most of the other names of the other refs that have worked for Glory over the past couple of years, but plenty. It's hard not to know his name. It's hard not to know his face. He's in there and he's doing a terrible job. And it's detracting from them, and it's to the point of Glory is still trying to gain traction. They're trying to do it with a new possible, you know, deal with ESPN. And in doing so, you need consistency, and you need the product to be front and center, not the referees and the judging and that kind of stuff. And that's been the main story from the past couple of events. It's been bad referees, weird judging, and that's you don't want that.
For sure. And go ahead and I need to say I'm going to mess his name up because I can't think of it. I think it's – is it like Blackman, the black dude that they've been using? I can't think of his name. It's something like that. But that dude's awesome because he's so fast with it. If you make a mistake, he just fixes him and he's gone. Like he doesn't want to have anything to do with the fight. He never uses his mic. It just happens to be on him. We hear Valenti talk all the time. That's another thing. We don't want to, like I said, not only do we not want to know your name, we don't want to hear you, you know? Like, it's just, you might as well just be one of those, you know, British guards. So, let's go ahead and go into the robbery of the year. This one's sad because, as we mentioned before, there are a lot of kind of candidates for this because of the judging. And, you know, because of the way judging has gone down and some of the scorecards, and I watch a lot of kickboxing. I watch from a lot of different organizations. Infusion's had some bad ones. Everybody's had some bad ones. But the reason why I'm going to bring this one up is because I felt like it was the one that kind of set on Twitter, like, through the whole weekend. And then as soon as the athlete starts making arguments for themselves in the, you know, as far as how they clearly won or whatever, how the judging was done right, and that's how they got the victory, it makes it even look worse. So... Sidichai versus Ruzmalin was my clear winner because it's not that I didn't think that, you know, Murtho and Nicky, what, you know, it's not like, and again, I thought that fight was closer than some people may have had it, even though I thought Murtho won. But when I look at the Sidichai Ruzmalin one, there were a lot of people that were like 50-45 on their scorecards. There were a lot of people that felt like the clear scoring was coming from Sidichai, but the outrage that followed and the fact that it always makes it worse when an athlete tries to make a case for themselves and the case makes them look worse, you know? So it's like, for those who are big boxing fans, when Margarito got caught with the hand wraps, one of the things that made it worse on him in the moment was he said everything looked the same. So when – and he said everything felt the same. He said I didn't do anything wrong. So it's like, well, if you've been with this same dirty guy and you said the hand wraps are the same and everybody says your whole career might be dirty now, you are better off saying it was different this time. You know, it felt different this time. Might as well just say it was that one time. But the way that he responded made people think, you know what, this is really, really bad, you know? And still, that's a weird one in boxing. There's a lot of boxing writers that still kind of defend him on that one. But in this situation, the community of people through that whole weekend were just robbery, robbery, robbery. And then on Instagram, Usman's like, I know the rules. The guy, arm, you know, punching to the, or kicking to the arm, kicks to the body. Those don't score. Low kicks score, boxing scores, that kind of stuff, whatever. And in my mind, I'm like, hey, a kick to your arm is a kick out of limb. A kick to your leg is a kick out of limb. You know, like, it's just, I don't know why it should be disregarded. If you don't use your second hand to use it as an actual block, you've been kicked. You know, so it's weird how it was scored, how it came up, but the outrage is the main reason why I gave it that one. Jay, what was your ups? Your robbery of the year?
My robbery of the year, I mentioned already, was Daniel Lungo versus Zabit Samadov on GFC. It was absolutely horrible.
Yes.
Just because he clearly won the fight, and then they gave it an extra round, and he clearly won that too, and they still gave it anything to give it to Samadov. It was just, those are the ones that bother me the most, are the ones where you know that they want a guy to win, and he clearly loses, and they still just give it to him anyway. You know, just whatever, just have him lose. He lost on your show, whatever, it's fine. But no, they wouldn't give it to him, and I thought Lungo won that fight. No problem.
Yeah, that one was sad, and you mentioned it. Those scorecards were handed in early. You know, like yes. It's just, let's not even get into the individuals behind some of these organizations, but like those are the sort of things where it's like, if the round's won by Yunga, it's a draw. You know, it's a draw on the round. You know, so it's like you're giving the opportunity. What was it with Zakaria? He was my robbery of the year last year, where he's fighting and shootboxing, and just every opportunity they can. Hey, we're gonna keep this fight going until you lose one of these rounds.
That was the worst.
Yes, that was horrible. So
those are the robberies I hate most, the ones where you know that they want that guy to win.
For sure.
They still clearly lose, whatever, that's fine. You could, you know, if it's a close round, you give it to him, that's fine. If you get beat up, that's, like, Zach, he did really well that fight.
That's crazy. One of my favorite moments when I was filming the documentary was when I was, you know, interviewing Roman Bojarski. We were talking about the fight with him and Musashi, and he was like, man. And the second one, I know they wanted him to win it so bad. And he was like, when it kept going to extras, he was like, he said, I just had to keep pushing. He said it was my favorite K1 World Grand Prix because I know that they wanted him to win so bad. And he said, no matter what I did, the cards went against me. And in the end, Musashi just wasn't good enough to mount any offense, and he ended up losing anyways. But it's just kind of crazy how that works. Dave, what was your robbery of the year?
I have to go with Sinichai and Robin as well, just because, my God, it was just one of those things of, like, like you said, Robin going on social media to defend it, and then Glory posting a quote-unquote interview with him right after about how he won and how he knew he won. Like, okay, here's the thing. Like I said before, Glory's trying to gain traction, and the bad judging and the bad refereeing are very bad for them. And what's even worse is when people start to see some of their stable of fighters go into the ring and say, well, that guy's going to win because Court Hemmers books these matches and Nick Hemmers is in his corner and there's been a management thing in the past and there might still be. Now, this is stuff that all of us have known, you know about the tenuous connections that are involved in kickboxing and all that. When you're kind of casual fans are starting to pick up on these things, which they have been, that like, oh, well, that guy, you know, like when all of a sudden Dustin Jacoby shows up with Nick Hemmers in his corner, and all of a sudden he's doing a little bit better and he's getting easier opponents, that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like people are starting to put them two together of like, oh, well, they have guys that they want to win. So then when Robin gets a decision like that, it's not, well, the judges made the wrong decision. It's, I wonder if Glory told them to do that. And I don't think that they did. I don't think that they would do that. But at the same time, it's getting people's thoughts out there of, hey, maybe this shit's corrupt. And that's the last thing that you want for legitimacy. Never mind the fact that seeing people, and mostly Dutch people, defending Robin's win and talking about how kicks to the arm don't count was just ridiculous. Yeah. Like, yeah. It's like, I even posted an article. I scanned through their rules to show that there's nowhere, anywhere in their specific rules that says that. It doesn't matter. It's, well, that's just how it is because it's, that's how Dutch style is. And it's like, you are just adjusting things as you go along to justify who you like, which is, I understand that. I get that. But at the same time, that was an ugly decision, and it was an ugly fallout, too.
For sure, you know.
I got something to say about that fight.
Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, about that fight. Like, for me, I wouldn't have, the robbery wasn't so much what it is. What it is, where they've messed up is, again, consistency with Glory is. If kicks to arms don't count, that's fine. They, you know, they do consider them block kicks. It's just like, if someone low kicks you and you lift it and block with your shin, that doesn't count either. Because you blocked it still with your limb, but you did block it, and you didn't get hit in the liver, which is where the kick is aiming for, or the spleen, which is where the kick is aiming for. But if you're going to count kicks to the arm in a fight with Sitichai against Josh, or a fight with Sitichai against someone else, and then you don't count them against Sitichai and Robin, then shit's going to get
Yeah.
If you're going to count no kick to the arm, they're not going to count. They're not going to count ever in any. But what the kicks to the arm do is they disrupt your offense. That's what Sitichai is doing. So if he's disrupting your offense, it might not be scoring, but they're scoring because they're stopping you. Just like a front kick, you know, is not going to so much drop you, but it stops you from what you're doing. That's how it goes. But with Robin, I didn't feel like it was stopping him as much as other people, but it was stopping him as well. So it, I don't know. I kind of saw an argument in the fight, but it's just they need to be more consistent with it. The referees and the rule meetings that we've had with Glory, they do kind of say that kicks on film doesn't count. They kind of mention it when you're there, but it, like, they haven't written it officially. I think if they're going to write it officially, they need to tell the judges officially, and the judges need to say that, okay, every kick to the arm, if it hits an arm, and it just hits an arm and doesn't do anything, then it's zero. It counts for nothing, kind of like hands in Thailand are the very last thing you ever count for.
Yeah. Yeah, and I definitely think that there are, you know, really good points there, especially on the, you know, the consistency is a huge one. And like you said, how it's scored, how Sitichai scored to get himself in the title contention and how he scored in the title fight. You're right. There's got to be something. It can't change for certain individuals. It goes to the favoritism thing that you know, you're talking about, Dave. It speaks to the, you know, it's never good. And I'm a fan of him, but it's never good when Corey Hemmers posts something on, you know, his Facebook. Oh, we're back to the gym today. And he's at Hemmers Gym, and you see all these guys around, and then you see those guys get on Glory opportunities. And I'm like, okay, you got to understand that people are seeing Honiton Oliveira has no business being fighting elite guys in Glory, but he got the opportunity, you know, because he trained at that gym. And I look at that and I go, man, that's going to, you know, we can't have that long term. And I know it's cool to think that, you know, having your son in the corner of half the card, it's you know, a dad being a dad, you know, but some of the athletes your son has trained earned that spot. And some of those guys aren't good enough to be in that spot. It will always look bad if the scorecards start to reflect that thinking too. And I think that, you know, it's just, we'll see. Let's give it some time. Let's see what happens over a period of time, you know. But I definitely think that this one, and again, we all think Robin's awesome. And I'm also in the same camp with Jay, for those who heard my podcast right after it. I thought rounds 4 and 5, I can make an argument for Robin van Roosmalen scoring the type of offense it would take to get those rounds. Like, I could see it. I could see the aggression, the way he was throwing. Like, there was a change of pace from the first 3 rounds. But I'm just saying, the way that this took out, the way this kind of took a life of its own to talk about the robbery, it's always bad for a fight. Go ahead and slide. We'll go into, you know, a little bit more fun topic to talk about. KO of the year. There's always good candidates, but for me, I always look for statements more than I look for spectacular, because you're going to have, you know, this is kickboxing, so you're going to have some, you know, Raymond Daniels-esque, you know, kick kind of every year, you know, like even when Raymond landed that, you know, that two-touch kick last year, when I was doing my highlight for the kickboxing highlights of the year, and I was like, man, there's a couple of these, you know, that there are those types of KOs all over the place. The exception is when you make a statement with the KO against another guy who's really good. So for me, my clear KO of the year was Rico Verheerven over Benjamin Adebuyi, the second fight. It's not just that the right hand landed so clean. It was that every right hand before it landed too. It was like, it was such a technical execution And he was so strong. And then just his mind on things. Like when he said that, you know, I figured I'd come out strong this round. Because in our first fight, Benjamin came out really strong. He took the round, but he didn't have anything left. So I figured going into this one, he'd try to start slower so he could have more late. So I decided to jump on him. That's a win. That's a win in training camp. That's a win in thinking about fighting. That's how this kind of, for people who watch this sport, who follow my podcast, who follow fighting sports in general, that's how this thing works. It's, I think, because of this, our history here, this individual is going to start a little bit slower. I'm on him. I can do this all day. I think I can do this all day. So when he brought that mentality to the offensive execution that he already has, because he's a wonderful technical kickboxer, but then the thing that we've always got on Rico about is he doesn't hit people hard. He doesn't have the KO power, and he absolutely cleaned Benjamin out with that right hand. It was just, you know, the way he fell down, I was like, that's our heavyweight champion. It was that kind of a moment. After that moment, you know, I believe, Dave, your write-up was from Prince to officially the king of kickboxing. Yeah. Like, for that kind of statement, that kind of KO, to make that kind of statement, if he had just won by decision, I don't think he would have wrote that. I think you'd be like, oh, another good win. But it's just the heavyweight champion's got to stop people. It's important. You got to get people out of there. So that was my winner for KO of the year. Kick it to you, Dave. What was your KO of the year, good sir?
You know, I mean, other than the Rico one, I would like to go with KO Fairtex over Minoru Kamara.
Yes.
At the K1 GP championship thing, because it had a story to it, you know?
Yes.
I mean, it was, other than it was a really good KO, Minoru Kimura had beat him earlier in the year. It was a majority decision, kind of whatever.
Yep.
But at the same time, this was the guy taking back his top spot and defending a championship, and it was just perfect. It was just, I loved it.
Awesome stuff. Jay?
I'm going with Spectacular one this time, and I like the one with Zakaria Zugari knocked out Yuki at the Rise 105. That double, the step up, like the kind of scissor knee that hit his head like into the ceiling, and he just dropped like literally on the spot. That was really a wicked KO. I watched it like 100 times.
Yeah.
I was really, I really like Zugari since watching.
You do like Zugari.
I really do.
Yeah.
I really do. His distancing, his style, everything's really cool. Like the way he does stuff, his distancing is just so good.
For sure.
And he's going to shock a lot of people if he can get, you know, the recognition. He's going to surprise a lot of people, I think.
For sure. Well, he's the kind of guy that needs to be on a glory roster. And the Hanata Oliveiras need to not be on a glory roster. So, but you're definitely right. And he's Dutch style. You got to love his style. So I don't know why. I mean, that can't
he's
be the issue.
He's always got good knockouts. Always spectacular knockouts.
For sure.
If he knocks you out, the people are out. He's out like one punch, one kick power at that weight. It's good.
For sure. And I do love that. I think they're kind of using him as Andy Sauer moves out. We're going to use this guy. And I do appreciate that because... like I said, it was such a horrible robbery, in that title or that final. And but I was glad that I go, hey, they use him all the time. They've used him on pretty much every show except for like one this past year. So I'm glad that they're using him. So definitely good stuff there.
One thing I was going to add to the Adegui and Rico fight that you were talking about, what I found is Benjamin actually, I think he released too much of his game plan to the public.
Yeah.
He actually said he was going to start slow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He actually said that he started too fast the last time. He said too much, which right away is going to make Rico go, oh, you're going to start slow? I'm going to start fast.
That's
exactly what happened. And then he got hit with that first right hand, and I think he kind of surprised him, and then that was it. I think Benny always starts fast, and he probably needs to always start fast to make people not just do that.
For sure.
Yeah.
And sometimes you got to be you. You know, I mean, I try to keep it kickboxing, but if I were to use an MMA example with Kat Zingano and Ronda Rousey, like, Ronda Rousey said, she's like, hey, we've seen her do the jumping knee on film before, and we figured she'd try to start fast because everybody keeps telling her that she fights slow. If your identity is fighting slow, fight slow. Go ahead. You've got 25 minutes to work in that situation. You can get things figured out over a period of time. You can get stronger and be you. So when I get this situation where it's like, hey, I'm used to starting quick, maybe you do start off quick, slow down for a little bit, catch a breath, then explode again. You know, Errol Zimmerman used to fight like that back in the day. Like on his way up, Errol Zimmerman used to come out really explosive for about a minute and a half. Then he'd get his breather in. And then after he got his breather in, he'd find another moment where he'd come out explosive. You just got to figure out how to make it work against the elite. But you're right. He even did it in the pre-fight interview. You know, like he even said, I'm going to start slow. And it's like, man, that's all right. But definitely good stuff on the KO front. Everybody go and check those out. We're going to go ahead and move to breakout star of the year. You know, we got some good options. Shahira Adamczyk, of course, goes from pretty much nobody to, you know, glory champion at 143 pounds. But my pick, and, you know, like I said, there were other names, but my pick was actually mentioned already, you know, in another topic and losing effort. My pick is Minoru Kimura. And the reason why I like Kimura, it's because the K-1 brand already recognizes that this is the guy to sell to our public. Like the way that I look, because I watched the entire, you know, pretty much all the K-1 shows since they're, you know, spread out. There's like five of them in a year, which I'll take. You know, go ahead, be who you are. I'm watching it, and I'm watching the champion show, and I'm like, this guy's ahead of the Japanese stars. They are pushing him more than they're pushing the Arube, the Arubes. Of course, you guys know how I feel about Koya Arube. They're pushing him. They're pushing him past, you know, Masaki Nori, who's very talented. They've got some talented people. They've got some talented fighters. They've got some fighters with history. They've got, you know, ex-glory champions in Yuta Kubo. They've got these guys on their roster. But they understand that this young man, his look, the way that he speaks Japanese fluently, the way that he's got this kind of bad boy type of image, which has always sold well in Japan for whatever reason. This guy, they've understood that this is the guy that the young teenagers are going to watch. Teenagers and people in their young 20s. And no mistake about it, when Max was at its height, that's who they were selling this to. So for people who are wondering, hey, how come so-and-so, who was 32 years old, didn't get the opportunity to fight K-1 Max? It's because he was 32 years old. The people who are sitting down and watching this brand were teenagers, high school kids, you know, men and women who are like, hey, you know, that kind of athlete, you know, reflects who I am, who I'm interested in, what I like, what appeals to me, what I would go see in a movie. That's what they kind of did this at, you know, early 20s, late teens. So with him, they've got a guy who's got KO pop, who walks people down. He's got a pleasing style. He's not the best kickboxer yet. He's still growing there. But he throws that heat, and that's always important. And I love that they, you know, they pushed him and they're using him. I still think that he's like, I was scared on the rankings when he was moving up the list. I was like, oh man, this guy, he's not a kickboxer. He can't be number one, but he kept winning. So like, so when he got stopped by Ku Fairtex, I felt like the world was righted. But as far as a star emerging, I really truly believe that he is a guy who, like, he lost in, I want to say, the second round of their tournament, of the 65kg tournament last year. So last year he wasn't a star at all. It was when he got that decision over Ku Fairtex, debatable, but it just started there and they built on it.
The ref helped that decision a bit.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. We'll go ahead and kick it. And even still, he was getting slaughtered for two rounds before that down scored. It should have been at, you know, an extra round if anything, but it wasn't a victory for him. We'll go ahead and go to you, Jay. Who is your breakout star? Somebody who emerged that we didn't know about before.
Like you already said it, it has to be Adamczyk. He's, like you said, he's gone from no one to everybody knows him now. He fights really well. He showed that against Varga, he showed that he can be a gritty, like, you know, kind of wear you out type fighter. From what I've heard before this, is he was knocking everybody out with his left hand at that weight. So we know he's got power there. He looked like he was hitting Murat really hard when he fought him. I really like his style, everything. Him being southpaw is obviously annoying for all the people that aren't. And so, yeah, I think it has to be him. I really do. He's had a really good year.
Dave Walsh.
We've all picked somebody different, and it's pretty funny.
That's awesome.
And I'm picking a guy that lost to Minoru Kimura. I'm picking Masaru Glunder, because Masaru Glunder is a guy that before this year, not many people were kicking around his name. After this year, I think everybody's aware of him, and his only losses are, I think it was the Kimura fight, and then I think he lost at that Yokao fight where he came in on like a day or two's notice.
Yeah.
Other than that,
against Sanchai. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, it was Sanchai. Okay, that's what I'm saying. Like, and everything else that he's done this year has been he's moved up in weight to just fight whoever, and he's won all over the goddamn place. I think it's just really hard to discount a dude like that who's, you know, he's fighting out of the Netherlands, which, you know, it's always a help. He's fighting out of Mike's gym of all places, and he's doing as well as he's doing. I mean, that's not a diss on Mike's gym, just they have a style, and I don't think he really adheres to it.
Yeah, he's... He definitely looks more like a Lucien Corbin type fighter. Like with, you know how Andy Risty, the way Andy Risty fights, I know he's got his own team and stuff now, but Andy Risty fights like a Lucien Corbin type guy. The way that he Glunder throws his knees and so on, it's, I definitely, his pacing, that the rhythm that he fights to, definitely more of a Lucien guy for sure. But I love that, like I said, the reason I wanted you guys on this show is so that the crowd can get this type of diversity. If we all agree on one guy, people are only going to check out one guy. But now they're going to go check out Glunder. Now they're going to go, you know, check out Adam and Chuck. And one thing that I want to add to, you know, Adam and Chuck, one, people don't realize this. He's the only guy who fought, well, him and Gregorian both fought in K1 and Glory this past year. The other thing that was really cool about this year was, we mentioned it before, Japan, it seems like they're picking some guys from Europe and they're using them a lot. So the fact that they're using Glunder a lot, because, I mean, he's the type of guy they could just as easily not bring back. But they're like, hey, people like him, like his style, like his look, like the way he performed. We'll give him another opportunity. I love that.
He really seems like he's up for anything. Fights Sandra. He fought at 72 kilos. He fought 65 kilos. In real life, he's not that big. He's not that big. I don't know how he was 72 kilos.
Yeah, he's a smaller Mirtho Grunart, fighting everybody. Yeah. Like, Mirtho fought everybody. Mirtho fought at 85 kgs once when he was, like, fighting at 154 pounds. That's insane. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm sorry, go ahead, Dave.
Oh, no, I'm just like, it's true. Like, when Jay and I were doing our last bout of rankings, we're looking, I'm like, wow, what about this fight? It's like, wait, it was at 72.5 kilograms. Like, what is he doing up there? But he still won, and it was like, okay, that's cool. I don't know. Like, I guess when you're young and you can jump around like that, and you can win, do it. Go for it. Get paid and get your name out there.
Cool. We'll go ahead and move on, but definitely, everybody, check those names out. Zahir Adamchuk, Saro Glunder, and Minoru Kimura. Go ahead and go to Event of the Year. Event of the Year, there's a lot of different options. You know, the Glory, you know, had some good cards, of course, as always, but I definitely think, even though it lost a fight in the card, the fight that I like the most this past year, the card that I like the most,
I can already tell it's going to be the same one.
Is the K1 Champions card.
Yes.
And the reason why I liked it so much, it's not just, like I said, there was the, and I was complaining about it too, the fight between the brothers, because the reason why it sat in my mind with Hirotaka and Koyarube is because Koyarube was schooling him, and I thought there was an opportunity where he could have stopped him, and I thought that he just kind of played with, like, fast hands and didn't let him do it, but Hirotaka seemed to be an understanding of, no, I'm going to try to do something to win this fight. So when that jumping knee landed, it looked like it was the last thing in the world Koyarube was expecting, because he was, like, laid out flat. Like, I thought they were going to call the KO there, but he got up and he fought back. It's almost like he was like, I thought we agreed that I was just going to win. I was already winning, like, but it was too late. He ended up getting that stoppage, the drama behind that. And then the other thing, not to mention, you know, of course, Masaki Nori won. That's my kid. So, of course, that's always really big. But the other thing that's really important to me that kind of kills both the Italy card and the Amsterdam card, there was a judge's decision at the end of it that was debatable, and it kind of left people with that weird taste in their mouth because of the finish. But when Kuf Ertex stopped Minoru, everybody was like, that was it. That was the event. You know, it had that kind of a walk-off type feel to it. So that was by far my, you know, and I've watched a lot of fun cards. Infusion had some fun cards. But even in the Infusion cards, those are still showcase our athletes against these athletes. You know, showcase our guys against these guys. Didn't have that kind of mutual high level versus high level. K1 Champions card was my favorite. We'll go to you, Jay. What was your favorite card of the year that you already mentioned?
Yes, that was the exact one. You hit it right on the head. That's the one. That's exactly what it is. They're putting top guys against top guys consistently there. Even their other cards this year were my favorites over the Glory cards. They're always, the guys are, maybe they're always fighting each other, that's fine, but they're always top guys against top guys. They never make boring fights. Something about Japan makes people fight harder than ever. I don't know what it is. I feel like maybe it's their appreciation. They know that the harder you fight, the more they're going to appreciate you. And they know that maybe that's what it is. I don't know what it is. But, yeah, it was a really good card. And like you said, there was, you know, not too much controversies. Too bad that Murat and Sani couldn't fight. That would have been really good.
Yeah.
I was looking forward to that fight. It's too bad that happened, but I'm sure they will fight. And, yeah, I do want to see Murat defend that title.
For sure.
Whenever he can.
And they gave him a microphone, so all's well that ends well.
Yeah.
Dave, what was your event of the year?
I mean, it was the championship
card. Oh, yeah.
How could it not be? It's one of those things, like, people listen to this, and if you haven't been, there's a lot of, like, well, K1's dead talk, and it's like, but K1 Japan, man. K1 Japan is doing really, really well right now, mm-hmm. and it's, they've even got a decent, not decent, but, you know, they got a TV spot on national TV now. It's like, you know, things are starting to pick up for them, and it's this card that was their year-end event, and it was just, it delivered on every level. I mean, you had 3 world championship fights, and they all ended in KO. They were all entertaining. You had, and then, like Jay said, yeah, these guys are fighting each other a lot, but I think that that's kind of what the appeal is at this point, because what was the appeal of K1 in the first place, you know, like at heavyweight? Like, they didn't have the largest talent pool in the world. They used those satellite tournaments to rope in other, you know, new people. But your core guys still fought all the time, and that's kind of how you knew who was the best and where they stood. And it's just, yeah, you're going to see these guys face off against, you know, there's a mixture of them in each weight class, but at the same time, that's what makes it so exciting. I mean, you know, just about every fight on that card delivered, too. You know, you think, like I said before, I think Ren Hiramoto is a decent talent to watch out for, and he's, you know, a deep in the undercard, and, you know, it's just, that's how good of a card this was.
Yeah, definitely good stuff. It was an awesome card, and you know it's awesome when it loses a fight and it's still everybody's pick. You know, like it's like, oh, we're gonna go ahead and hamper this card a little bit, but it's still gonna be the card you want to see. So definitely good stuff there. And I love that, you know, we've had different answers on some, but I love that everybody came together, was like, this was the card. This was a lot of fun. And again, it's not that we're against the Glory brand for people who are big fans of the Glory brand or whatever, but until the end of the year, the Glory brand wasn't always putting on Glory fight cards top to bottom. And this one really did from the beginning. It's the guys who took over Japan for the last couple of years, and me and Dave have been saying it, we've been bringing it up on this podcast and so on. They just understood that, you know, we're not that anymore. We're not the bring in freak show Bob Sapp and everybody's going to sit down and want to see this guy do it. We're not that anymore. But we do have really talented people that are the average weight class of a lot of people in this country, you know, smaller and so on. And we've got some good athletes there. Let's push them. Let's make that our brand instead of trying to make a bigger Masato, which isn't going to happen. So I think that they just did a great job. Let's go ahead and go from event of the year to fight of the year. And this one's tough. There are entertaining fights all over the place, because there's one thing that I always say, the kickboxing brand, the product of the sport will always produce awesome fights because of the athletes, when the athletes engage. So we really get some really good stuff. Vakadava Yunga, perfect example, really good fights there. Javier Hernandez and Hirotaku Robe was a lot of fun. There's just great fights all over the place. I'm going to save this guy because I'm going to talk about him in my fight of the year, so I'll go ahead and leave that one alone. But I think the pick that I'm going to go with for fight of the year is Nicky Holtzkin versus Raymond Daniels 2. And the reason why I say that one, it's because Raymond Daniels couldn't have had a better start. Because we talked about the tools that I'd always talked about on the show that I needed to see. Number one, I still feel that he's either all boxing or all kicking. Like, I don't feel that there's a flow between the two of them, but I felt like that was his best landing consistent offense because he was tagging Nicky Holtzkin. So it wasn't like he was just kind of point and move. There were times where he just sat down and just, he's a, such a good athlete, where he just sat down and just started throwing strong shots. He started throwing heat and just started connecting. And I was like, wow, he's scoring at will, clearly wins round one, and he's clearly winning round two. And then all of a sudden, Holtzkin starts going Holtzkin and just starts investing some well-timed shots to the body, well-timed shots, and it's like he took a break for two rounds. Then the body shots, they didn't even take long to build up. We get into round three, we're two different fighters. Nicky Holtzkin looks like he just got to the fight. Looks like he just showed up, and it looked like Daniels had already fought in a tournament that night, when in fact he just won two rounds, and now he's got to figure out this Nicky Holtzkin situation. The way Nicky Holtzkin mentally can say, I've got five rounds to work. You know, it's like for those who watched the first Spider-Man movie, where Macho Man looks at him and he says, I got you for 3 minutes. And this one, he's like, I got you for five rounds. You can go ahead and run around and do all that flashing all you want. It's my time to work. The way he invested into the bodies, the way that knee split the guard, the way he uses the peel, when Holtzkin's on, people are like, that's kickboxing. Like he's always that brand. So this fight, the change of pace, the way it was finished, and finishing means a lot to me. That's why I went with it. There are other fights that I wanted to mention because they kind of have finishes too, and they have back and forth too. But I definitely want to give fight of the year to this one. It's closer to my other pick, but I'll kind of leave that one quiet. But fight of the year for me is Nicky Holtzkin versus Raymond Daniels. We go to you, Dave. Fight of the year.
This is a tough one because as many good fights as there were, like, I don't think that many really stood out among the rest of the pack, which was kind of 2015 in a nutshell. There was a lot of good fights, but not a lot that, like, I've been, like that I would show somebody getting into the sport and be like, you watch this, you're a fan. But because of how much I've watched and my taste and how I like stories involved in this, the Hirotaki Urobi versus Koya Urobi from that November show probably takes it because they fought earlier in the year as well.
Yes. And yeah.
The brothers and the story to it and the comeback. I probably would just pick that just because it's like payoff. If you've been watching K-1 Japan and if you've been following like Crush in the, you know, meantime since K-1, FEG's K-1 kind of went away, they've been the guys to watch, and watching them, you know, contend for the 60kg championship twice just made a lot of sense.
Definitely good stuff there. I'll kick it to you, Jay. What was your fight of the year?
This was a hard one. I'd like pretty much be trying to choose now about it. Like, I didn't have anything. I'm thinking it. I think that Takaru versus Bon Giovanni fight might have been my favorite fight.
Yeah.
I thought Bon Giovanni was going to get beat up, but he does hit hard. And he showed it in the first round, and he, you know, got that knockdown, and Takaru came back for a victory. And he's a really good fighter. And he came back and showed why.
For sure.
And I think that was my best fighter, favorite fighter of the year for me. And, all the other, like Dave said, it was a hard year to think. Like, there was no huge standout fight for me, I don't think, like that. Like the Shahid and Zambidi, like it wasn't one of those this year.
Yeah, for sure.
Everything was just good, but nothing was like that. But this would have to be the best one.
For sure. And that's, you went ahead and just threw out the greatest fight as the you threw out the fight. It was like, there was nothing that was close to the fight anyways. But definitely good stuff there. And I like that, you know, we had different answers in this one. We'll go ahead and move to moment of the year. Did I send you guys bad moment of the year as an option?
Yes.
No. Oh, wait, did you? You did worst moment of the year. Yeah.
Worst moment, okay. So before we get into our good moment of the year, let's look at some of the bad moments of the year. Of course, some of the candidates, the situation with Jackson and Super Combat, and the judging, of course, comes into play. Kunlun, major fight cancellations comes into play. Because sometimes I don't even think these fights were just confirmed. I just think their fights were like, this is what we're going to do. We just forgot to ask the athletes. Like, I think that that comes into play. But for me, my bad moment of the year was the execution of the Dynamite show. Because, like, it really could have been, you know, like, I just watched the fight just the other, or I watched the Risen card last night. I enjoyed the Risen card last night. There were stoppages and everything. The flow of kickboxing to MMA and that was just fine. Just flowed right through it. It seemed like both organizations were under the understanding of, you know, or both sports were in an understanding of, hey, we're going to give you this MMA guy to kill in kickboxing, and you just give us this kickboxing guy to get submitted in MMA. Everybody wins. So, like, that's how I felt like I was watching it. So I thought the execution of Risen, I mean, it's Japan, so they know what they're doing. But the Dynamite show, the breaks, the fact that, and I love Mauro Ranalli, but something seemed like maybe he was told that he has to, like, make an argument for kickboxing if there's not a KO in the fight. And I'm like, we don't need that, you know? Let's just go ahead and call the fight as is. We have one guy shows up 7 pounds overweight, but he's fighting, you know, daily. So that fight's happening no matter what. He could have, you know, showed up 20 pounds overweight. They would have did it if they could have, you know? So we've got that. The championship fight, they just kind of got ugly with Saul Calvary and Zach Wakasa. So I was like, man, this could have been all right. The best fight you had as far as, you know, guy versus guy was the Adamczyk fight on the undercard. And that one doesn't even make the televised broadcast. But, you know, one of the women's fights makes the televised broadcast, even though it was an entertaining fight. But because she was a local ticket seller and from the area, that's what they went with. So when as soon as I see all those kind of decisions being made, I'm like, this ain't got nothing to do with the, you know, the glory brand of kickboxing. This is Bellator having kickboxing on their show and just the off part of their show. The flow wasn't there going from one, you know, cage to the ring. It just didn't happen for me. So that was my bad moment of the year for kickboxing. Jay, what was your bad moment of the year?
Worst moment of the year. Had a couple. Usually my worst moments of the year is when a fighter gets injured really bad. There wasn't anything too bad apart from the Errol Zimmerman Vico Verhoeven fight.
Mm-hmm.
I hurt his knee, that upset me. Even though Errol looked like he hadn't trained for the fight, I still was, you know, Errol still can hit hard and yeah, still knocked him out. And Vico was already knocked out by him, so I was expecting, you know, something good. And the Artem Levin versus Simon Marcus draw was upsetting. It upset me. It was not a good fight. It was just the whole thing. I did not enjoy it at all. To me, that was one of the worst moments, because there was a build-up, and I was expecting so much more, and I was crushed. Hopes and dreams were crushed on that fight.
Hopes and dreams. Good good stuff. Dave, bad moment of the year.
You know, it's tough. I mean, like you said, the Dynamite show. Man, and you said the execution of it. You know what? That show was an execution. That show was the execution of glory on Spike TV.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things. Wrestling Twitter's been using the hashtag political hit for anything that they think is somebody getting screwed over on TV. And that was a political hit, man. That was Scott Coker saying, I don't want you here. Spike doesn't want you here. Get out of here. And, man, that was such a bummer. It was just, there was promise, but you know what? When the rumors started going around about that damn show, about how Coker was wanting to do his own stuff anyway, he wanted to put his own kickboxing fights on there, talk about 2016, how he wants to put on his own kickboxing shows, and how Glory had to literally buy their way onto that show. They still deny it, but I've heard that from a bunch of people, that they had to pay money to get their name on that canvas. That show, man, that was a big bummer, and that was, that had to have been the worst moment of the year. I mean, I really wanted to give my Romanian stalkers that moment of Morosanu and Jackson, but because that was terrible. That was embarrassing.
For
that
sure.
Was very embarrassing for the sport, because literally, I mean, Jackson is a case of a guy whose record is pulled from thin air. I mean, come on. When I saw that record when he entered Glory, I was like, I don't know who this guy is.
Yeah.
That doesn't work that way.
And this is what we do.
Exactly. And but then, you know, Super Combat picks him up because, well, he was in Glory and he has a good record, and he could probably lose to Morosanu, and then he loses to Morosanu. He chooses to lose to Morosanu, whatever, and then they fire him in the ring. Like, who does that?
For sure.
Who, like, announces, well, the fight's over, he's fired. Like,
angry people do that.
I know.
Or Donald Trump.
Yeah, you know.
It was embarrassing, and come on, guys.
For sure. And one of the... Go ahead.
But yeah, the Dynamite show was still the worst thing, because that was a burial. It was an absolute burial, and it was sad to watch as a fan of kickboxing, because the people who were watching it saying, this is what kickboxing brings, and it was just so, like, no, it's not. Like, this is just... This is Coker... You know, I think Coker is great for what he does, and I absolutely admire the dude for all he's been able to accomplish, but that's when he's angry, and that's what that was.
For sure. And it's crazy because, you know, and I already went on my rant about the Jackson thing and so on, because I still blame Super Combat for this.
Yeah!
Because, like I said, I know as a fact that, you know, DeMario Dennis, who comes and trains with me sometimes, I know that he was offered that fight. And then I know that he said they're not going to use me. They decided to go with Zabit Semidov. So I know that they had two live guys that wanted that opportunity, and they said no and went for the easiest opportunity. And
I asked them about the Zabidov thing, and they were just like, well, you know, him and Caitlin are friends.
Yeah.
So they're not going to fight. And it's like, what? That would have been a really good fight.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything about what we saw, but you know, it's the guy who he's probably one of the better refs that's, you know, recognizable. The big dude that refs in Romania, or whatever. I can't think of the guy's name. But when he took his glove off and like threw it at, I was like, so you know, you've really upset some people if he throws something at you, like, are you kidding me or whatever? It's just it's weird. But like I said.
Funny, the K1 Power, you know, the guy from the Kakutugi Forums was messaging me during that. He's like, they're throwing stuff at him right now.
Yeah.
Like, oh my God.
But that part was awesome. But let's go ahead and go into our good moment of the year. Our good moment for me, it actually follows what you just said, Dave, as far as Glory and Spike. For me, the end of the Glory Spike deal was the beginning of Glory becoming the best organization for high-level kickboxing. Because the card that they had in Italy and the card that they had in Amsterdam reflects the best talent in the world. Like, it's a card that's got... There was still a couple weird ones in there. The Fred Sicking fight was a weird one. But ideally, that's what has to happen. And that's going to happen on a UFC card. You're going to have some weird ones. But, like, that contract meant the end of them trying to make the thing with the Americans happen. And I'm like, you're not going to be able to. I mean, we've got a Glory brand card. You're trying to appeal to an audience here over in America. They're not familiar with the brand. The way K1 did it and had success with it was they came over with their biggest stars, and they had tournaments, and they had super fights, and they came over twice, twice in a year. Glory was like, all right, we're going to try to do this thing anew, and we're going to try to go to America. We're going to do, you know, 10 shows this year. We're going to try to do 6 of them in America. That's a fail. We don't have the athletes yet. Over here, we don't have the athletes. So if Coker is doing his own kickboxing brand, let that build towards your brand. Of course, you're going to, you know, Coker's going to Coker. He's going to use, you know, guys from San Jose and from that area and pay them good money and move them in a certain way. But, like, we've got to figure out we've got to get local promoters to do the job that they were trying to have Glory do. We got to get guys to believe in the kickboxing brand in whatever state, whatever area you're in, and try to get some of these guys the activity it's going to take to some way compete. And I had to travel. As a coach, I had to travel to get myself better. I went out to Holland. I went to Thailand. Like, I spent significant time away from here. And some people are going to have to do that if that's your dream. But for them to say, I'm going to leave the market of kickboxing that makes us the most money and commit to an area that hasn't made us that much money but's got us the best TV deal, and then focus on moving cards to, you know, adhere to the wishes of Spike, that knows nothing about kickboxing or the kickboxing product. They just know, oh, we got to make sure we got Americans on it. So sometimes it worked out okay for them. You know, the situation with Raymond Daniels, that was kind of he was thrown into that 4-man tournament, even though he had no business being in the tournament that reflected the best 470-pounders in the world. No, he's not in that tournament at that time. He's really gotten good, and he's done better since. But at the time, made perfect sense for them not to use him in that tournament. But they threw him in there because they're Spike. The whole idea of Schilling and Barrett, the first time they fought. Barrett wins on the, you know, on the undercard, or he wins on the Vegas or the LA show, and they go, oh, let's make this fight. Put it on the main card. Put it on the TV card. Now that we're done with that nonsense, We could just focus on putting the best guys against the best guys, because being on ESPN means that they're playing, you know, I'm probably playing Premier Soccer right now if I go over, you know, look at my TV. And they're used to an international brand being on their networks. So I'm hoping that the moment of the year for me was the death of that old contract and the introduction of the new one. And I hope it works out. Clearly, I'm hoping we get our to the point of live shows, but, you know, which could, you know, still very well happen. But that was my moment of the year as far as good things happening. Jay, what was your moment of the year?
That's that was good points there. Yeah, it was, but I think all my moments of the year were all the revenge stories this year made me really happy. Moments of the year like Robin defeating Andy Risty, Zagari defeating Suzuki finally, and Fairtex defeating Minoru. All the revenges that needed to happen happened, and I love those stories. I like the revenge cards like that. And, yeah, those are, for moments of the year, I couldn't pick one. So all three of those revenge stories are really good for me.
Hey, that works for me. You picked a theme. You picked the revenge theme. Yeah.
Yeah, I did.
For sure.
They're really good. You know, all the fights I thought were the rightful winners got the revenge to me, I guess. Maybe it's just the guy I like better, but... I thought the rightful winners got. I thought Minoru kind of shouldn't have beat Kao the first time. Nope. I thought that Risty was just. I really thought that, like, you know, 9 times out of 10, Robin beats Risty. And Zagari won the fight with Suzuki, no doubt. And then now he actually got the win.
Definitely, definitely good stuff there. Dave Walsh, same thing to you, buddy. What was the moment of the year?
You know, it's tough because there weren't really any, like new champions that were crowned that really were, like, surprising or anything like that, or, like, a big heroic moment. It all kind of felt just kind of like, okay, this happened, and that was probably going to happen anyway, so what? So I'm prone to agree with you on that whole the Glory and Spike deal coming to an end. People saw that as the beginning of the end. And it was just, no, like, that was a toxic relationship. That was not a good thing. I mean, the fact that Spike and Bellator were going to have a Dynamite event with kickboxing on it, and they had a kickboxing show on their network, and they weren't considering that, is ridiculous. The fact that they had so much, like, control over fights that happened, it's just ridiculous. It should have never been that way, and I understand why it was that way. I understand that Glory was just trying to do what was best for them and to, you know, become popular and all this kind of stuff, but you know what, putting on good fights and having them out in a decent time slot is way more important than whatever the hell was going on at Spike. I mean, that was just when they had the France show, and they aired it at 4 Eastern and then didn't put a replay on in the evening, but they had, you know, reruns of Cops instead. It's like, this is not a network that is your friend, and I know that they were paying pretty well, but they had a very clear vested interest in Bellator and in Bellator's success, and, you know, then they were airing PBC fights and so forth. It's just, they didn't seem very invested in Glory, and, I still think that Glory will make the most money in the United States through their TV deals and sponsorships and stuff, because European TV deals are kind of a mess.
Yeah.
It's always funny to me that people in Europe are like, yeah, but, you know, like, we have this network and this one, and it's like, how many of them pay?
Yeah, how many of them are live?
Yeah, how many of them pay cash money? You know, that's how many of them are not just putting on an hour highlight show here and there? Like, when Glory goes over into a new into a market over in Europe, they usually have to negotiate a brand new TV deal for that one market. When they went to France, they had to negotiate a new French TV deal for that one show, just the one show. Nobody wanted; they didn't want anything more than that. They're like, "You're in France, we want your France show." It was, I don't know. TV is a whole mess. But yeah, when people talk about Eurosport and stuff like that, Eurosport pays $0. You know, they just want programming, and it's I don't know. It's a mess, but I think that Glory can pick up better crowds in Europe, and I think that they should stick there. The cards that they've done over there since they left Spike were phenomenal. You know, definitely more along the lines of what they should be doing. I think they can still improve here and there. And, yeah, I mean, I think as long as you can do that and then air in the U.S., you should be doing that. That's the perfect perfect meet in the middle solution. So I know the ESPN deal isn't totally 100% yet. I mean, it might be at this point. They just haven't announced it. But as long as that keeps going, that was a big deal. I like that a lot. That made me happy.
For sure. And it's weird because, you know, as we were saying, with the best talent in the world being reflected by the Organization of Glory, there are people who fought on some of those undercards that I'll see on, like, some MMA promotion down the road. They'll be like, glory level striking. And I'm like... Wait, what? You know what I'm saying? In my mind, I'm like, sadly, that's not that high of an honor, you know? But yeah, well, it can be.
Well, think about Dustin Jacoby, right? Like, that's a guy that they gave – he finally got there.
Yeah.
He totally got there, and I'm really – good for him.
For sure.
He did it. He finally learned. He stuck with kickboxing, and that we need more of that. We need more American MMA fighters who are willing to say, but I like kickboxing better. But the way that they used him – was terrible. Yes. They threw him to the wolves every chance they could, and he wasn't ready for it. But he was in the UFC. Who cares? Really? Are people going to watch because some guy who fought in the UFC at some point? Dude, the UFC has a lot of fighters right now.
Yeah.
Like, that doesn't mean anything anymore. This isn't 2008. This isn't 2008 where it was the Super Bowl of MMA and it was only the top of the top. UFC is running their own King of the Cage, basically, at this point. It's, you know, it's a different world now. So saying this guy fought in the UFC or this guy fought in Bellator, let's put him on this card, you're not doing anybody any favors. You're making it look worse.
For sure. Let's go ahead and wrap this up with Fighter of the Year. There were definitely a lot of options. You can go a lot of different directions. I think Holtzkin was 4-0 this year, 2 wins over Remy Daniels, the win over Myrtle Grunhardt. We talked about his, you know, upset loss in the beginning of the year. Mariko Verhoeven had a good year. But mine, and I decided to keep it, I liked Takuro, and I really did. I think when you're – he's 55 kgs. He's carrying a weight class on his back. He's the star that they're putting out there. He's got KO pop. And most importantly, he gave me a moment in the fight with Takuro and then Charles Bongiovanni, as was mentioned before. That was the other option I had for Fight of the Year because – he gets dropped, and he comes back, and then he stops the guy. It was such his style of fight, and I'm like – this guy, not only is he super talented, not only does he have KO pop for such a small guy in such a small weight class, but he's carrying a weight class on his back. He's doing it for a promotion that's, you know, they're going to give him the opportunity. They're going to bring guys in. You know, I'd like to see him against like a Sergio Wilson type, because Sergio Wilson's always been a guy who's fought at like 60 kgs, but it's way too big for him because he's such a small guy. But I would really like, there's fights to be made with him. But I just love that he's a small guy and he's not just doing it with volume. He's doing it by stopping people, and that means something to me in the sport. So getting a decision, I mean, he had a ho-hum decision one of the fights this year, but stopping guys means something to me. And I thought that he did a great job there. He was my Fighter of the Year, so when I do my kickboxing highlight, and it comes out next week, people expect to see Takuro as the guy. I also want to mention this as a sidebar. A guy who had an underrated sleeper Fight of the Year that nobody probably is even thinking about is Artur Kishenko. He went 8-0 this year. And he stopped 4 of those guys. And he got, what was it? There was Jonathan Oliveira was one of the wins. The big win was against Achim Elgoy. And the reason why that was big is not just because Achim had fought in Tatneft and had, you know, Tatneft, I don't know if we, I mean, that's weird kickboxing, but still kickboxing. but he fought in an infusion. And I thought even the brand was like, Hachim's going to be the guy. This is his first step-up fight. And I didn't even think they needed an extra round. I thought it was clear to me that Artur Kishenko won that fight. And I was like, man, this guy goes out to Spain because he thinks it's best for him and his family. He likes the situation a little bit better than living in Holland, living on beaches. He's pretty much, you know, running his own camp out there. He tells those guys when he's going to be working out and not working out. But he had such a special year without anybody noticing it. But he's one of the casualties of the K1 or the Glory brand being in the United States all the time. Because if they've already got, these are going to be our guys. He's got the one baffling loss where, I mean, I just look back and I go, how did you lose the Karapetyan? But he did lose the first two rounds and he started too slow in that fight. But he's the kind of guy that should have been fighting for them a couple times a year and then putting himself in a position to fight the Joseph Valtellinis, then the Nicky Holtons. Like, he should have been there. But instead, they went a different direction. They started filling up their whole undercard. Instead of using high-level guys like him, they used, Americans that, we're never going to hear of again. I'm hoping those Americans stay with kickboxing, but they shouldn't have been on the Glory brand. So guys like him got cut out. China's giving up them big checks because China's got the good TV deals in China. And so he's going out, he's fighting in Kunlun, and he's stopping guys. I really thought his 8-0 year was a good one. I just didn't pick him because I think 3 years ago, I think I picked him the year that he beat Yosin Klai. I picked him as fighter of the year. So I was like, you know what? I got to go. I'm going to go a little bit different. I'm going to go with the little guy, Takuro. So that was my fighter of the year. Jay, who you got?
Before I go into that, I think that Arthur and Mike's gym may have had a falling out as well.
Yeah.
Which will completely get him out of Glory just like that. Which is another, not so good thing about that. The personal stuff should go away because Arthur Grishenko is probably the hardest fight for Nicky at that weight right now.
For sure.
And
beat him clear.
Him moving away, the way he's done it, I think has made him fight smarter. Like, thing is, he showed up and was just some powerhouse. He's huge for 50 kilos, for 70 kilos, knocking everybody out. And then he's, he's gigantic for that weight. And now he's fighting like up to 80 kilos, and he's fighting smarter as well. Like that fight with El Gui was great. He threw instead of his 1-2 left hook, he always throws. He threw a 1-2 jab, stopped from kneeing him. It was really, really good. So I don't know. It's sad. I'd like to see him against me again, for sure. And as far as fighter of the year, I was gonna mention Arthur as well because I looked how many fights. Yosin Klai has done really well this year. I think he could be the fighter of the year. He hasn't lost all year. He's either 5-0 or 6-0. He beat Murat. He beat, everybody he's fought. He's beat them well and easily the way he should. And, he's not doing Muay Thai. He's kickboxing. And it was between him and Rico for me, and then Rico's loss made me decide on Yosin Klai being fighter of the year for this year.
Good stuff. And I like the different answers there. Noted Yosin Klai smashed Askarov this year. Like, very one-sided. Like, he's a special talent. And it's so crazy, the body change that he's gone under since getting, a strength and conditioning coach. Because, they don't have none of that nonsense down there in Thailand. But now it's starting to get big. CrossFit and, like that's starting to be a big deal now. So definitely good pick there. Dave, fighter of the year, good, sir.
I'm going to say this was another tough one. I might just go with the almost default choice of Nicky Holtzgen at this point because he had a very good year. he finally became the champion that he was supposed to be. He didn't get that fight with Valtellini that he wanted, but you know what? Them's the breaks, and he even said that. And he actually had a pretty big year for being a star on top of that. He had his own reality show over in Holland, and that show that Glory had there, that was sold out for him.
Yeah.
Which is astonishing considering they had some pretty good names on that, but nobody else, those people were there for Holtzgen. They went crazy for him. You looked out in the crowd and you saw those neon shirts of his, everywhere. It was just, that was the biggest show that they had seen in Amsterdam, and God, since it's Showtime back in, I can't even remember what year they had that last big Amsterdam show. So that was a big deal. That was a pretty damn big deal that somebody in a lighter weight class like that, it was kind of a real turning point for just Dutch kickboxing in general of just like Nicky Holtzgen is the guy now. And it wasn't Rico Verhoeven, it wasn't the heavyweight champion that you would have expected them to rally around. It was the smaller guy who's pretty charismatic. Had a TV show there and stuff, and he's pretty much looking unbeatable there, except for, a couple of brief moments there against Myrtle, which, whatever that decision was. People will say you went either way, but, whatever.
For sure. But I think you hit all the good points, because it's like your version of it is kind of like how I did my, KO over the year. Like, what's meant by being this guy, what's meant by being the champion. I thought that Nicky does, he appeals to, like, it's so, it's, how weird was it seeing the mayor sitting there cheering like he's a kickboxing fan? Well, this guy's been the one guy I've been trying to keep the sport down forever. And part of me just, like I said, I mentioned it before on the podcast that I wondered if race came into play, if, you know, this Nikki and Rico are more acceptable looking superstars for Holland and the way Peter Arts was. Whereas they have this, you know, racist stigma against people who are Moroccan and so on or whatever that I experienced when I was there in my training and when I did the documentary, like just the view that people had. Like I mentioned the story all the time where I was driving in a cab and I, right after I did the interview with Badr Hari, we're leaving Mike's gym and then we're just talking about Holland in general and one of the guys just casually says, well, the problem with Holland is all the Moroccans. The Moroccans are like 90% of the crime. And I'm like, how much of like that sort of, clearly it's a racist statement that, you know, I would love to see the stats on that. And then 90% of the prisons is all Moroccan. But like when I first heard him say it, I go, how much of the emergence of Glory going back to Amsterdam has to do with a Nicky Holtzkin type? The guy who, like you said, the reality show, he's a family man, you know, a spiritual guy, you know, he's just, he's a very, he fits it, you know, and even the little things that he did. I can't tell you how many people posted and reposted the video of him training at the Black Zillions. And now BJPenn.com, I mean, for what you ever think, they're just posting is like, oh, and World Championship Kickboxer teaches Vitor Belfort a thing or two, yada, yada, yada. And I'm like, man, this is happening all over the world right now. But it was a big deal because BJPenn.com, 7 months after it happened, they started to realize that Nicky Holtzkin is a significant figure in kickboxing. Vitor is a significant figure. Let's just chop it up and make it our own story. Journalism at its highest, clearly.
They probably stole the text anyway.
Yeah, you know, so it's like...
They also added that, he picked a fight with someone and someone picked a fight, a UFC fighter, and he knocked him out. That was his sparring session with Michael Johnson.
Yeah, you know, it's just so mad. It's when I saw it, I was like, two things. My first thought was, you guys are killing me because this is the sport. Yeah. This is what happens. This is what happens in sparring all over. Guys get caught. You go against elite level guys. What do you think's happening at Himmer's gym right now? What do you think's happening at, you know, Majiro gym, all these major gyms? What do you think's happening? Guys are getting, they're going against other good guys in the gym. They're getting clipped. It just happens. But for them to try to make a story that, you know, Nicky Holtzkin, because you could just go to like Michael Johnson's timeline and Instagram is like, oh, I'm going to be sparring Nicky Holtzkin. Like, he's all excited because he's going to go against this guy or whatever. Clearly, this is them practicing, and someone just made a story up out of practice, but it shows the level of star power that Nicky Holtzkin has because Robin Van Roosmalen's been there doing the gym for them for a long time, and I ain't never seen no story about Robin Van Roosmalen cracking a guy at the gym, and I know he's cracking guys at the gym, you know? So it just shows what level of athlete and what we're dealing with Nicky Holtzkin. So I really like that answer, and I really like all of our answers. I like, you've got Yotsen Klai, his dominant victories, the fact that he's kickboxing, a second sport for him, doing his thing. I talk about, Takuro and what he's doing in a smaller weight class, doing for the K1 brand that's having good years. And then you talk about Nicky Holtzkin. I think that we're giving everybody a little bit of everything. So for people who don't listen to this podcast on a regular basis, I'm definitely going to push this one out. I'm going to push this episode because I want you guys to hear the different answers that we have, the different prospects that we talk about. One more thing. Could you spell out, do you have the spelling of the prospect that you mentioned, Dave? Just because I don't think people heard that one that clear.
Ren Hiramoto?
Yeah, Ren Hiramoto. Got it. So I just want to make sure we said that one clear because in the recording it kind of looked like it came in a little early. But other than that, I think that you guys, we've given you all fighters to definitely go check out, brands. You can get that whole K1 Champions card. I think it's like an actual full YouTube video link, like the whole card's on it. So definitely check these guys out. Follow the Kickboxing Sports. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for joining the show. Before we leave, Jay, anything that you want to say, anything that you want to promote?
No, thanks a lot for having me on here, and I'm not here to promote things. I don't know, I'm here to talk about kickboxing. Hopefully this will help promote kickboxing, make it bigger, make it so we can make a living doing it, training, my brother's fighting, all those type of things, and hopefully that's all I really want.
For sure. Dave Walsh?
Just as usual, go to liverkick.com because you should be going there every day and, you know, click on the ads because why not? And you can go to my own site too, dvewlsh.com. Who knows, next time I'll have a book out. We've got a couple done, but you know how it is. It's life.
For sure. And thanks a lot again, everybody, for listening. Be safe. Scare world out there. Hearing crimes and all kinds of nonsense all over the place. But I definitely hope that people take refuge and enjoyment in the combat sports and that you really sit down and take a look at these kickboxing athletes who are putting on great performances. The product always sells itself. There's going to be another card that happens this weekend that not too many people hear about, but the card's going to be sold out. The entertainment's going to be high level, and this is happening on a regular basis. So definitely get out there, support the sport, and I'll do my best to keep doing kickboxing. I might have these gentlemen back on. I'm definitely going to do a year preview show, you know, say, hey, what are we going to look forward to once the year passes? But I wanted to wrap this year up with this type of show. So thank you very much, gentlemen. Thank you to all my listeners. God bless, and everybody be safe. Peace.